Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, fast-tracking the COVID-19 vaccine. Across the world, scientists have moved at breakneck speed to find a vaccine to combat the coronavirus. As of today, 27 of those have begun human trials. Here in the U.S., a Moderna and NIH trial just moved into phase 3, the last phase before possible approval. And the White House has announced that 5 promising vaccine makers will receive billions of federal dollars toward their efforts. So just how close are we to reaching the goal of a widely used, safe, and effective vaccine? I asked ProPublica healthcare reporter Caroline Chen for an update and what the challenges are ahead. Caroline, you say we have to get this right, and at the same time, we can't get this wrong. Explain what you mean.
I think when it comes to the coronavirus vaccine, I think the stakes are high on both sides. And so that's why I say we have to get this right and we also can't screw it up. And what I mean by that is we have to get this right because we really do want a vaccine to help us end the pandemic. And it's going to be a really important tool in helping us eventually getting to the levels of immunity that we need society-wide, you know, to help us control this pandemic and help prevent people from getting sick. But on the flip side, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot more, you know, there has been growing vaccine hesitancy across the U.S. and globally, and not only hesitancy, but there's a pretty voracious anti-vax movement. And I think that, you know, for all of society, and not just because of the anti-vax movement, if anything goes wrong with the rollout of a national vaccine program, this could do a lot of harm to other vaccination programs beyond the coronavirus vaccine. So that's why I say we have to get this right and we also have to not get it wrong.
So do you think that currently we are getting the messaging regarding the prospect or possibility of a vaccine right or wrong?
Personally, I think there's a lot of focus right now on speed. And I think that there could and should be more focus on explaining to the public the entire process of what goes into making sure that the vaccine is both safe and effective, along with the speed. Yes, we do want a vaccine sooner than later. You know, we're not, we don't want to wait a decade for this coronavirus vaccine, but we also don't want to move so fast that we neglect the all-important safety and efficacy. And actually, a lot of work is being done to check those boxes, but I think that's not being communicated to the public.
You know, I am a little concerned about what I've read in regard to several companies touting the fact that they are working on a vaccine, even though they're not part of the group that has been selected to work on the vaccine, and upping their stock prices, making huge amounts of money just by saying they're working on a vaccine.
Welcome to the biotech industry. Unfortunately, this will always happen. I think that when there are publicly traded companies that are looking for an opportunity, you know, there are always going to be some bad apples that may be out there looking to get an edge that might, you know, put out press releases that make things sound a little bit more than they are. And I also think that it is a little bit of human nature as well to grasp for hope and even set aside the bad apples, right? We look for hope. We look at a press release about a study done in mice, you know, and we're always like, oh my gosh, there might be a cure for Alzheimer's around the corner. And as a science and health reporter, I'm always like, well, hang on a second. That was a study in mice. So you got to like calm right. down there, because you got to have an appropriate amount of hope and an appropriate amount of skepticism. So I think that even when a company is not trying to necessarily hype themselves, I think that investors or people in the public sometimes run away because they're trying to grasp that hope. However, I do think that what this is going to come down to is the FDA, because we do have a system where we have a regulator. The regulator is the FDA. So a company can hype itself all it wants, but at the end of the day, the vaccine's not going to be available until the FDA says it can go on the market. So a lot is going to rest on the FDA.
And currently, I understand that in this country, I gather at least two companies have created potential vaccines that have been known to create an immune response. And now we're moving to phase three trials. Explain what that means.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question, because I think if you're not paying super, super close attention, you might see a headline that says, you know, so-and-so's vaccine, whether this is Moderna's vaccine, Pfizer's vaccine, Johnson & Johnson's vaccine, there are a lot being developed right now, or AstraZeneca's vaccine currently, that's mainly the trials are in Europe. Have produced an immune response. So what does that mean? So the first stage of trials, so typically there are three stages of trials. So phase one, phase two, phase three in humans. And even before that, they do studies in the lab and then they do studies in animals. So those all need to be cleared first before you start in humans. And then in humans, you have phase one, phase two, phase three. Phase one is focused on safety, and it's done in healthy young volunteers, and the only focus there is make sure that this is very, very safe. And so for that reason, the trial is usually extremely small. Phase two, the trial is a little bit bigger, usually in about a few hundred people, sometimes just dozens of people. And there, they're continuing to get safety data. You're getting safety data all the way through all these trials. Very, very important to do that. But there, you're starting to make sure that this is working the way you think it is. And that's where you start getting headlines that say things like, they've elicited an immune response. And what they're looking for there is to see whether or not the vaccine generates antibodies. So that is the immune response that a vaccine should have. It should trigger your immune system to react as if it had encountered, you know, a real coronavirus. And so they draw the blood of study participants and look in the blood to see whether or not there is an immune system response. So if it had nothing, then you would be a little bit worried.
And how many people would be involved in that phase three study?
Yeah. So then if the phase two has that good indicator, there is an immune response, then the phase three is usually in tens of thousands of people. So Moderna's phase three trial has 30,000 people. About half are going to get a placebo and half are going to get the real vaccine. And my favorite phrase here to explain the phase three trial comes from Dr. Paul Offit, who is a veteran vaccine scientist. And he says, if the proof is in the pudding is the phase three trial. And the reason here is you can elicit an immune response in a phase two trial. So that means you can see that in the participants, in their blood, you can measure antibodies. But there's still a bit of a remaining question, which is how many antibodies, what level of antibodies do you really need to prevent an infection? If you really encountered the coronavirus out there in the wild, what level of antibodies do you really need to protect you? And so the only way to really know this is to run a phase three trial where you put the vaccine in tens of thousands of people, you compare it to a placebo, and you let those people go live their lives and find out who actually gets sick and who doesn't. And even we should talk about this, you know, somebody might be vaccinated, they might get infected, but does this mean that they then have a very, very mild form of the sickness. So maybe it doesn't prevent them from getting infected, but it helps prevent them from having a severe disease. That could be a hugely beneficial vaccine where it prevents severe disease. So they track 30,000 people for months, and then at the end of the trial, they compare the vaccine arm to the placebo arm, and they count up the number of people who got infected, and they count up the number of people who got really sick, they count up the number of people who got hospitalized, and they say, did the vaccine make a difference? And that's where they really then know, did the vaccine work?
But surely with 30,000 people involved, that could take a lot of time.
Right. So that's why this is a months-long process. They are doing this across hundreds of sites, mainly in the U.S. I think they are looking at some trial sites outside of the U.S., but my understanding, at least from Moderna's trial, it's mainly in the U.S., but they are doing it in, you know, dozens of locations is because they want this trial to run quickly. And then the other thing, which if you think about it makes sense, is they are trying to locate trial sites in areas where there are still ongoing outbreaks, because if nobody was getting naturally infected, then they'd have to wait a really, really, really long time to see if the vaccine had any effect versus the placebo. So in a weird way, you know, for the sake of public health, we obviously want nobody to be getting sick, but for the sake of figuring out whether the vaccine works, we kind of want there to continue to be infections, because that will let the trial run faster, so we will know whether or not the vaccine works.
So this sounds really strange, but what you're saying is if not enough people are getting sick in a community on their own, that there's not enough data out there to compare vaccine results.
Yeah, and actually, this was nearly a problem for developing the Ebola vaccine back during the 2014 Ebola outbreak, because they managed to get it under control towards the end of the outbreak when Merck was developing the vaccine. And in a couple of countries where they were running the trials, there just weren't enough people getting infected for them to compare the vaccine to the placebo. And it just, fortunately, in one of their trial sites, there was still ongoing outbreak enough, and their vaccine was so effective that they were able to see a big enough difference. But yeah, if we all did so well with social distancing and washing our hands that like we basically stopped the virus from transmitting, we maybe would, the trial could take a very, very long time to run. So this is kind of a bit of an irony of how vaccine trials run, and is another reason why sometimes these manufacturers end up going overseas to run their trials, because they are trying to basically chase infection hotspots.
How effective does a vaccine need to be considered effective?
Yeah, that is a great question. So just to step back and give your listeners sort of a frame of reference here, I think instinctively we know that there are some vaccines that are 100% or close to 100% effective. So like the MMR vaccine, if you do what is recommended and you get the two shots, that according to CDC data is 97% effective at preventing infection, preventing you from ever getting measles at all. So that's like close to 100%. That's what they call sterilizing immunity. On the flip side, you know that the flu shot from year to year is, you know, maybe more or less effective. So where is the coronavirus vaccine going to land on that spectrum? We don't know yet. Now, what I've been told by the experts is that we're lucky so far, quote unquote lucky in this pandemic, in that the feeling is that the coronavirus is not mutating anywhere near as fast as the flu shot. The tricky thing about the flu shot is that the seasonal flu mutates a lot year to year, which is why they have to put out a new flu shot every year. And it's a bit of a guessing game. That's why the flu shot's effectivity year to year is, you know, sometimes it's not as great because they're guessing every year. So what we've been lucky in so far is that the coronavirus does not seem to be shifting very rapidly. So that gives them some hope that we're going to have a relatively effective vaccine. However, the expectation is not that it's going to be 100%. What they're saying, I've heard anywhere at least about like 70% effective at preventing severe disease. And I think this is going to have to be well communicated to the public, whatever is approved, what it is that it does, because actually, we don't need it to be 100% effective for it to have a great impact on this pandemic. So just think about this. If we had a vaccine that was 70% effective, say, at preventing severe disease, particularly for the elderly, I think we're also concerned about our grandparents, about people in nursing homes. So if we had a vaccine that was able to, say, if your grandparent got sick, made it so that there was no longer this fear that they would end up in the ICU. It really, you know, even if they did get infected, really reduced the severity of the disease for them. That's a huge win. But I think it's important to explain that to people, that that's what the vaccine does, so that if they later, you know, they've taken the vaccine, but then they still manage to get infected, they don't say like, oh, this vaccine didn't work, because that's not the promise of that vaccine, right? It might not be able to totally prevent you from getting infected, but what it did is like really reduce the disease to something that is very, very mild. So it really depends. We don't know yet. This is what the phase 3 trial is going to do, is figure out what the vaccine is able to do. And my biggest concern is that whatever gets approved really needs to be communicated to the public as to what it is we can expect from it.
More of my conversation with Caroline Chen when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily. Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Caroline Chen, healthcare reporter for ProPublica. So how soon do you think we might know the results of the phase 3 trial now underway?
I think, as you mentioned earlier, there are a number of vaccines that are poised to move into phase 3 trials, and the Moderna vaccine has started its phase 3 trial. So there's going to be a sort of like a slow cascade of data coming. But for the Moderna trial, you know, if everything goes well, I think we could see data by mid to late fall is probably the earliest. That does not mean that we will immediately have vaccine available, because remember, the FDA has to then review the data.
Of course.
The FDA has the ability to ask the company for more data if there isn't sufficient data. So best case scenario, it's like a home run and the FDA can immediately approve it. That would be mid to late fall. But again, that's sort of best case scenario.
But the president has said he wants this on warp speed, has talked about the race to get a quick vaccine. I mean, how do you view those comments?
Oh, this is already happening at warp speed. So I just want to give some context for this, in that, you know, typically speaking, a vaccine takes, you know, 7 to 10 years to develop from lab bench to approval. And so if we had a vaccine approved by late fall, this would have happened at warp speed for sure. And I think a piece that we haven't talked about yet, which is enabling the speed that this is moving at to a large degree, is that these companies are manufacturing at risk. So what does manufacturing at risk mean? Typically speaking, it doesn't make any business sense to make more vaccine than just what you need for the trials. You would make a batch of vaccines for the trials just as much as you need. And then you would run the phase 3 trial. And then if the trial was successful, then you would fire up your manufacturing plant to make it at scale for commercial use. Instead, what is happening now is that Moderna, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, all of these big companies are starting to manufacture millions of doses even before the phase 3 trials are done. So that's what they call manufacturing at risk. The risk part here is that they're putting money and materials at risk. So if the phase 3 trials are not successful, they're basically going to have wasted all of that manufacturing. But if the phase 3 trials are successful, once the FDA approves the vaccine, they will have millions of doses ready to go. So that's very unusual. It's not totally unprecedented, but it is highly unusual. It doesn't make a lot of business sense. It makes pandemic sense. And that is really scrunching the timeline.
That's going to, it seems to me, put a lot of pressure on the FDA to move more quickly than it ordinarily does.
Oh, yeah. I think the FDA is going to be under a lot of pressure to make a decision once data is available. And I think, you know, under normal non-pandemic circumstances, there's a bit more of a queue, you know, where if you're making a drug, you submit your data to the FDA and they're kind of like, get in line, we're reviewing other stuff, you know. You wait your turn. In this case, the second the data is available, it's going to go to the top of the line, you know, and the FDA is going to have people ready to review it.
But isn't there a danger there, perhaps cutting corners to get things out that much more quickly?
I hope that the FDA will be insulated enough that they can review the actual data independently. And I do think that there are enough people at the FDA, I hope, who understand that there's no point in putting out a vaccine that is fundamentally, I think safety is a bar that everybody understands. Like if you put out a vaccine that is unsafe, you know, you're doing yourself more harm than good. Now, I think the part that could be more of a gray area is if the vaccine is, say, not clearly as efficacious as we want, but has some efficacy. So it's kind of in a gray area of efficacy, but we don't have any vaccine yet. But we have another vaccine that's in phase 3 trials and its data is coming in 2 months. Then what? Do we wait? Do we wait to see if that one that's coming out in another couple months has better efficacy, or do we put out one that has sort of like medium efficacy so that people have an option first while we wait to see if something better comes down the road? I think those will be the hard choices. And another thing I would remind people of is that at the point a vaccine is approved, if we do have something by the end of 2020, it's not going to be enough for everyone in the US. The initial availability is going to be very, very limited. And there's going to need to be prioritization for the people that need it most. And I think that that is a different risk-benefit calculation. So for people who are essential workers on the front lines, or for elderly folks who live in nursing homes, I think there's a different calculation there for if you say, you know, a vaccine with middling efficacy, of course it has to be safe. So let's say safety is guaranteed. Would you want a vaccine that is of middling efficacy because you're super high risk? Or would you want to wait longer for a vaccine that has better efficacy while the virus is still circulating? Because not having a vaccine comes with risk. So for someone like me, who is so lucky to be able to work from home, who is young and does not have health risk, like I can afford to wait because I'm not a frontline essential worker who has to go out. So I think these are all such difficult questions that it's hard for the FDA.
Yeah. And is it possible for the FDA to approve a vaccine before the phase 3 trials are completed?
I think that would be an extraordinary circumstance. And I think that would be highly, highly controversial. Now, the FDA has what's called emergency use authorization, which has been used for, you know, all the diagnostic tests, has been used throughout this pandemic. They do have levers to pull. However, bear with me. I'm going to kind of walk you through this kind of argument here, which is if the argument to approve a vaccine sooner is, you know, so many people are dying because the outbreak is raging,
right,
that we need a vaccine sooner. But if that was the case, remember how I explained the phase 3 trial to you, which is if there are a lot of people being infected, the phase 3 trial should run faster, right? Because a lot of people are being infected, it should be easier for the phase 3 trial to run faster.
Right.
So I would argue that if, you know, the outbreak is out of control in the US, you should be able to finish a phase 3 study faster. And that should be able to give you clear data. And the other thing that has been pointed out to me as well is that we can't skip the phase 3 trial because it gives us safety data. And it's so important for us to have a large pool of safety data on these vaccines. Having just phase 2 data, which is in hundreds of people, is an order of magnitude less than having safety data from tens of thousands of people, which you'd get from a phase 3 trial. So I think that it would have to be pretty extraordinary circumstances for the FDA to approve a vaccine without a phase 3 trial completed. And certainly many of the vaccine scientists I've talked to have said, you know, I've asked them, like, of all the corners you are willing to cut, you know, of all the, you know, because we do want a vaccine, you know, sooner than later, not, you know, we're not willing to wait 10 years. What are you unwilling to sacrifice? So many of them have just said the phase 3 trial. As long as we have a robust phase 3 trial done with full safety data, with clear efficacy data, I would feel comfortable taking the vaccine, has been the response, a pretty consistent response.
I want to ask you about herd immunity. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fauci has said that a vaccine that is 70 to 75% effective, but taken by only 2/3 of the public, would not create the herd immunity necessary for economies to get back up and running. Now, that question brings in the issue of how many people are going to be willing to take the vaccine. I mean, you talked about those most vulnerable, but then there's a whole other category of people who not only would be reluctant to take this vaccine, but who are anti-vaccine altogether. How does the communication regarding this vaccine have to be framed so that people will understand its importance to the whole country?
Yeah, I think that communication is going to be so important. And I think that in some ways, public health is going to have a bit of a trial run this fall, because it's going to be really, really important for people to get their flu shot this fall. And the reason for that is there are a lot of doctors and public health officials I've talked to already who have said, you know, their concern is we haven't really had to face the flu and the coronavirus at the same time in this country. And there is some hope in that, you know, if we do mitigation strategies for the coronavirus, they should work against the flu. You know, like if we all are really good at washing our hands, you know, and maintaining social distance, it will help with the flu. So that's the good side of it. The flip side, though, is that if people are not good at those things and they don't get their flu shot, the fear is that a lot of patients with flu will take up beds in the hospital with severe flu cases that they would prefer to keep open for potential COVID patients. And the difference here, though, they said, is we do have a preventative for the flu, which is the flu shot. So they really hope that there'll be a really good public health campaign for reminding people to get their flu shot this year. They're like, more than any other year, it's really important this year that you get your flu shot. But this will be a good trial run because we will have the flu shot available for the public before the coronavirus vaccine is available en masse for anybody who wants it. And so it'll be really interesting to see whether or not we improve uptake of the flu shot this year in the U.S. compared to previous years and how the messaging goes down around that. I think it'll be a good practice for this country, and we'll see what happens. But I think you're absolutely right. Communication is going to be the most important element around the coronavirus vaccine.
There are some real concerns that President Trump is going to announce a week before the election that there is a vaccine. If people in both parties believe the government can't be trusted, where does that leave us?
My hope is that this does not become any more politicized than it already has.
And it really already has, hasn't it? With sort of a campaign against Anthony Fauci and the statements that the president has made in the past about not wearing a mask. And now you've had one of his great supporters die of the COVID because he did not wear a mask.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here.
And I think that to me, further politicization of the vaccine is just not going to help any of the public health goals around the vaccine. Like, it just needs to be removed from the political sphere as much as possible. Because, you know, one thing we haven't talked about here is that approval of the vaccine is not the end of the story by any means here. Once the vaccine is approved, I mentioned we're not going to have enough for everyone, the first vaccine, because just in terms of manufacturing capabilities, the first company that reaches approval is probably only going to have a few million doses, which obviously is not going to be enough for the US or the globe. So there's going to need to be prioritization, and then there's going to need to be some sort of distribution scheme. That's going to need to be communicated to the American public who gets it first and why. I really don't want there to be a case where, like, you know, with PPE earlier on, that every state is kind of fighting to get whatever vaccine they can, you know, where it's every state for itself. There needs to be a federal strategy where it's coordinated so that the people that need the vaccine most get it first and there's no issues with access. I mean, this needs to be federally coordinated. And you know, the agency that makes the most sense to coordinate this is the CDC. So I'm very concerned about how this will be rolled out. And the less political this can be, the better.
Well, I fear that there is a little wishful thinking going on there. But the other concern that people have is mistrust of Big Pharma, knowing that Big Pharma is out there doing its own race to get a vaccine for good reasons, because the country needs it, the world needs it. But at the same time, there's a certain amount of mistrust, certainly because as we look back at these painkillers, for example, that were pushed onto the market, just one example for people not to trust what's coming from Big Pharma. So on that note, I fear the only thing we can do is to try to adopt your optimism that it will not be politicized.
I mean, I think for me, what I am going to be looking really closely at is the data, because that's what I can see as a health reporter. To me, what I put my hope in is that there are a lot of eyes on this process right now. Like, there's more scrutiny on this, you know, from the scientific community than any other vaccine trial, you know, probably in the history of man, you know. So these trials will be picked apart. And if for some reason the data does not get surfaced, it will get picked apart. I mean, originally, you know, there were some companies that first went out with a press release before they put out their data, and they were shouted down for not instantly having their data on hand because the scientific community wants to see the data. And I go back to the phase three trial. Like, it's so important that the phase three trials get done. It's so important that the data be really transparent. And it's going to be really important that the experts get their chance to go over the data and then really clearly explain to the public what it is that's in there. And I think that it's going to be, I mean, this is partly on people like me, on journalists, to then explain what it is that we have and be really clear, you know, is this a home run vaccine? Is the data muddled a little bit? You know, are there concerns in here? You know, whatever it is that we have, I think it's so important that journalists, health journalists, leaders, you know, the scientific community be super, super, super clear with the public exactly what it is in this vaccine, because that's the only way that we don't build more mistrust. And I go back to the very start of our show. Like,
indeed,
we need to get this right. We need to not get this wrong.
Caroline, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
That was Caroline Chin, healthcare reporter for ProPublica. And that's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've reached out to let me know what you'd like me to cover during this very difficult time. Please do continue to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Vint Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman, Allison Brody, and Sandra Baker. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. Please do remember to wear those masks. And thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.